This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Big Picture with me, Lim Suan. You're listening to our Law and Behold series, which is aimed at improving constitutional literacy among Malaysians, done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar and the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law. So on our 10th episode today, we'll be discussing the role and importance of the Dewan Rakyat and the Dewan Negara in the workings of our democracy. So in the studio with me today are Emeritus Professor Dato Dr. Syed Salim Farooqi, Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Malaya, as well as Kee Hui Yi, a member of the Bar Council Constitutional Law Committee. So just to start with the Dewan Rakyat and the Dewan Negara together with the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong makes up the parliament, is that right?
Yes. There are three constituent units, one elected, one indirectly elected and partly appointed, and of course then the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps briefly to start, what is the function of Parliament in Malaysia?
Well, let me begin by saying that in any democracy, Parliament is extremely important, not only in matters of passing laws, imposing taxation, but also in keeping the government accountable. And in the context of a Westminster democracy, what is often called responsible government, I think one can outline 9 to 10 functions of a parliament very briefly, just the headings. First of all, giving legitimacy to the government of the day. The House of Representatives or Dewan Rakyat can make or break a government, in the sense that the PM must come from the Dewan Rakyat. He must command the confidence of the lower house, and he could be voted out of office by the lower house. So that's number one, giving legitimacy to the government. Number two is the legislative function. I'm afraid this up to now simply means passing of laws. One could add to that passing of constitutional amendments. One should add to that the responsibility of keeping the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong's emergency ordinances under review. Mm-hmm. And in my personal view, one should add to the legislative function the duty to scrutinize subsidiary legislation, which is something that is not done in this country. And I would even go to the extent of pointing out that Parliament should be involved in law reform. So that's the legislative function. Then enforcing accountability, making the executive answerable, control over national finance, but that's a job only for Dewan Rakyat, not so for the Dewan Negara. Constituency function, that's a job only for the Dewan Rakyat, to keep in touch with the constituents, attend to their grievances. Representing the electorate in the Dewan Rakyat, you've got 222 constituencies. And so each MP basically represents an electoral district. Mm-hmm. Then under our Constitution, Article 46, electoral boundaries cannot be modified or delineated or created except with the consent of the Dewan Rakyat. That's under Article 46. The Election Commission has to submit its recommendations to the Prime Minister, who then lays it before the Dewan Rakyat. In Malaysia, there is an additional function, Malay Reserves. Mm-hmm. If a state enactment seeks to de-reserve a Malay Reserve, the law requires the approval of each house. Mm-hmm. Parliamentary privileges, both houses have the power to enforce their privileges. And finally, when it comes to the Dewan Negara represents the states and minorities. So these are the 10 functions of a parliament in our constitutional setup.
Mm. And when you mentioned scrutiny earlier, you also mentioned something called subsidiary legislation. Could you explain what that means?
Yes. You see, in theory, parliament is the law giver. In actual practice, parliament meets only about 80 days in a year. Mm-hmm. And there is not much time to attend to all the laws that need to be passed. So around the world, what happens is that the legislative body delegates its power to delegates. In Malaysia, we call it subsidiary legislation. In England, they call it delegated legislation. So if Parliament, under the University Colleges Act, delegates power to the Lembaga Pangarad, Board of Directors of University of Malaya, then the board is a delegate, has the power to make delegated legislation. For all practical purposes, delegated legislation, though by a subordinate authority, is as much a law, as much affecting my rights and duties as an act of Parliament. So I think Parliament must keep an eye on what the delegate is doing. It should not be a case of delegating and then forgetting about it. In many countries like England, there will be scrutiny committees, either of one house or of both houses, joint committees, to keep an eye on what the delegate does. So that's what I mean by delegated legislation. May I inform you with some sadness that for every one act of Parliament that is passed, delegated legislation by the federal executive would be about 20 pieces of delegated per one act of Parliament. So the center of gravity of the lawmaking process lies not in Parliament anymore. It lies with the executive.
Right, right. So the executive will be carrying out those delegated legislation.
Yes.
Mm. And you know, as we mentioned earlier, the Parliament constitutes of both the Dewan Rakyat and the Dewan Negara alongside the Yang di-Pertuan Agong. So let's go into the Dewan Rakyat right now. First, what is the composition of the Dewan Rakyat?
At the moment, we have 222 members of Parliament in the Dewan Rakyat. This is also under stated under Article 46 of the Federal Constitution. So there was actually an amendment passed in 2005, I believe. So previously, we only had 194 MPs in the Dewan Rakyat. But I think after years of, you know, redelineation and a lot of activities went on, and eventually the number of MPs had increased. As of now, we have 222.
So we've briefly gone through the roles of the Parliament, but could you elaborate more on the role specific to the Dewan Rakyat?
I think as Prof mentioned just now, a few things that only Dewan Rakyat has the power. For example, under the boundaries or the delineation, yes, of the constituencies, which is done by the Election Commission, but the Dewan Rakyat has to approve the, you know, the new boundaries or the new constituency that has been created by the Election Commission. It has to go through the Dewan Rakyat, you know, to allow all these new constituencies or modify. Or for example, I think last year before the general election, there were even changes to the names to the constituencies. So all that is actually under the power of Dewan Rakyat. So money bill, we talk about money bill. Yeah, so under Articles 62, mm-hmm, 66 to 68, and then 73 and 79, we talk a lot about finances and taxes. Only the Dewan Rakyat can determine how much tax can be imposed on our Rakyat.
Well, Dewan Rakyat has power to bypass the Dewan Negara. Mm-hmm. Mm. In the case of money bills, it's 30 days, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
30 days. In the case of non-money bills, 1 year.
1 year.
So in the legislative process, the Dewan Rakyat obviously has dominance, especially as Huyi pointed out, in the matter of the raising of money and the spending of money. The budget bill cannot commence in the Dewan Negara. All other bills can begin either here or there.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the budget bill, it must commence its journey in the Dewan Rakyat.
Mm, okay. And so far, now our Parliament turned 60 this year, in September this year. How efficient has our Dewan Rakyat been throughout the years?
It's a tough question, but I think truth must be told. Parliament has not been very successful in performing its constitutional function in the area of lawmaking. Executive has captured the legislative process. Parliament merely legitimates, it does not legislate. When it comes to enforcing accountability, yes, a great deal is achieved during question time. Facts come out. Criticisms are levied. Questions are asked. Policies are criticized. But in the end, ultimately, MPs have their say. The government has its way because the government has a majority. So the accountability function is more theoretical than real. In 62 years, no government has ever fallen on a vote of no confidence, even though the theory of responsible government says that the Dewan Rayat can vote the Prime Minister out. In 62 years, no minister, as far as I remember, has been voted out of office. Mm-hmm. Because even if some MPs criticize a minister, the rest of the cabinet will, under the principle of unanimity, rally around him and he's saved. In Malaysia, ministers never do any wrong, and that's why we have never have Parliament has never had to remove them. But that's not the way it is. So I'm afraid, except for the constituency function, there I have to mention, Malaysian MPs do a good job going back to their constituency, most of them. There have been studies done that comparing Malaysia with Japan, and people have found that the Malaysian MP is much closer to his constituents, his or her constituents, than MPs in other countries. So except for the granting of legitimacy to the government, the majority support, and getting in touch with the constituents, all other functions have not been performed well. And I think a great deal of reform is needed.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of reforms do either of you foresee as possible to improve the institutional efficacy of the Dewan Rakyat?
I think as most of Malaysians, we have been talking about, you know, having the Prime Minister's question Q&A time in the Dewan Rakyat. And I think as of last year, end of last year or early this year, the Speaker of the House actually said that it's underway. They are talking about it. And I think apart from that, the Speaker also said that a few committees, select committees, have been set up as of last year. So it appears that they are trying to do something. They are trying, definitely trying to reform, carry out some institutional reform within the House. Because I think there are many issues, including things like gender equality. We still have, you know, have a big issue on female MPs and male MPs and that sort of issues. And then, so I think the setup of these committees, select committees, are good. But as of now, I think we haven't heard anything further than that.
Mm. I just wish to add to this in support. Reform of the Dewan Rakyat, in terms of assertiveness in the legislative process, accountability of the government, is easier talked about than done, because the Dewan Rakyat is a political assembly. Ultimately, MPs will support the government of the day. But I think the secret lies in strengthening the committee process. As Huyi pointed out, some committees have been put in place. How effectively they have operated, or whether they have started to operate, I'm not so sure. But I think that's where secret lies. On the committee floor upstairs, if more frank discussion is possible, the atmosphere will be less partisan. And there won't be 222 MPs sitting. There'll be 10 to 15. So I think the efficacy, institutional efficacy of Parliament is best improved by having committees. But of course, committees can be many types. They could be legislation committees. They could be scrutiny committees, ad hoc committees. So there could be departmental committees. Like in England, for every ministry, there is a counterpart parliamentary committee. So I agree with you, that's where the reform actually is possible. And I'm glad that the present speaker of the Dewan Rat is attempting the strengthening of the committee system.
And just to clarify, so these committees within the Dewan Rat, yet the members of the committees will be selected from the MPs?
Yes. The committee will be headed by an MP, but the beauty of the committee system is that actually the committee can invite outsiders to come and give evidence. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, public participation is possible. Expert opinion can be obtained. The members of the committee will, of course, be from within, but they are allowed to bring people from outside to advise, assist, and to educate them on issues.
I've been speaking to Emeritus Professor Dr. Shad Salim Farooqi, Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Malaya, and also Ki Hui Yi, a member of the Bar Council Constitutional Law Committee. And we've been speaking about the role of the Dewan Rakyat and its journey to what it is today. So we'll find out more about both the Dewan Rakyat and also the Dewan Negara after a few messages. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. You're listening to our Law and Behold series, which is aimed at improving constitutional literacy among Malaysians, done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar and the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law. So with me in the studio are Emeritus Professor Dr. Shad Salim Farooqi, Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Malaya, as well as Ki Hui Yi, a member of the Bar Council Constitutional Law Committee. So we've been speaking about the efficacy of the Dewan Rakyat. And you know, it's been a year since G14 when a new government took over. There were quite a few reforms introduced after the elections. But do you think that the idea of reforms have been better received in the year since the elections?
Yes, of course. The idea of reform is very much at the core of government efforts. But one has to bear in mind that some reforms are possible through administrative practices, like who you mentioned, committees have been set up. Now, that doesn't require any change either of an act of parliament or of the constitution. Administratively, these things can be done. Some reforms require amendments to acts of parliament. Other reforms require amendments to the constitution. Mm-hmm. So I have to alert you and all our listeners, while it is right and fair to expect the government of the day to fulfill its reform agenda, we've got to remember this. This is not a dictatorship where the supremo can order a change. The change has to go through parliament. The government of the day, the PH government, does not have a two-thirds majority in the Dewan Rakyat or in the Dewan Negara. So the constitutional amendments will always be a challenge. The government of the day does not have even a simple majority in the Dewan Negara. And that's why the, what was that? The bill.
Anti-fake news. They wanted fake to news, re- anti-fake repeal the news bill, but was killed blocked
in
by
the Dewan Negara. Yeah. Because PH government doesn't even have a simple majority in the Dewan Negara. So I think these things must be borne in mind. What the government has to do is not only to formulate these reforms, but to work out a cross-party support for some of these amendments. Only then will they be made. But I'm not pessimistic, because number of reforms can be done administratively. And for example, you talked about Prime Minister's question time. Now, that is merely an internal issue. How many days in a year Parliament should sit? That doesn't require any change in the law. I hope that they will borrow a leaf from the UK. In the UK, Parliament sits for about 180 days. Our Parliament sits 80 days. Dewan Rat sits 80 days. Dewan Negara sits 20 days. Now, surely we can change that. We can change that administratively.
I think to add on to that, I think the reform is definitely possible. I just think that the government needs to stay on track, shouldn't be distracted by other issues. And I think one of the example is the voting age. Mm-hmm. You know, it has been proven it is possible to change. There might be, you know, some debates. If it's healthy debates, obviously, we, even as Rakyat, we encourage that.
Yes.
And then, I think even without the two-third majority, that shouldn't be an excuse for the current government not to do anything.
Mm. Yeah, and that was really quite wonderful, isn't it, to see the Undi 18 bill pass. It was a yes from all members of the parliament that were present there.
Yeah, that's what I was... I agree with you. The government has got to build a strategic relationship with the opposition, get their support, present the bill in such a way that the opposition feels obliged to support. Because you oppose lowering of the age, that would work badly against you at the next election.
Are there situations where someone could be disqualified as a member of parliament?
Oh, yes, actually, the constitution is very clear on the rules of disqualification, both for the Dewan Rakyat and Dewan Negara members. For example, very clearly, if a person is of unsound mind, if he's an undischarged bankrupt, if he holds an office of profit, if he has committed an election offence, there are a long list of election offences. For example, you don't disclose how much money you spend. If he has been convicted and sentenced to not less than 1 year, or not less than 2,000 ringgit fine. If he has acquired a citizenship or a double citizenship in another country, then he cannot be a member of either house. And of course, there's also the age issue. Age 30 for Dewan Negara, age 21 for the Dewan Rakyat.
And let's move on to the Dewan Negara now. So the Dewan Negara is composed of senators, right?
Yes.
And how many members are there of the Dewan Negara?
The Dewan Negara has two types of senators. There are the indirectly elected senators.
Mm-hmm.
They are indirectly elected by the state assemblies. Each assembly chooses two. So that is 13 times 2, 26. There are 26 indirectly elected. May I call them state senators? Then there are 44 appointed senators, appointed by the Yang Di Pertonagong on the advice of the Prime Minister. So the term of office is 3 years, renewable once, maximum 6 years. The Dewan Negara members are unaffected by the dissolution of the Dewan Rakyat. So if Dewan Rakyat is dissolved tomorrow, the senators would still stay in office for their fixed period of 3 years and, of course, renewable.
Mm-hmm.
May I also just point this out to you, because this is something very important from the point of view of the Dewan Negara reform. When we began our journey, our tryst with destiny in 1957, the first parliament sat actually in 1959, the number of state senators was 11 states times 2, 22. The number of appointed senators was 16. That 16 has now increased to 44. The state senators were 22, they are now 26. So this is a very, very negative, undemocratic development that nearly two-thirds of the Dewan Negara is appointed and not elected. And I think this is one area where some reform needs to be looked into.
Mm-hmm. If it has moved to become quite non-representative, and I've seen there's been quite a few arguments on that. There's also arguments that the Dewan Negara should be abolished. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, instead of giving my own thoughts, let me just quote to you what the Constitution itself says in Article 45. Article 45 says that Parliament may by law increase the number of state senators from 2 to 3. At the moment there are 2 per state, we can increase that to 3, so it will be 39 instead of 26. Of course, this will have some economic implications, because from 70 you will have then 83 senators. You'll have to pay more money from the taxpayers' funds. The Constitution also says that the state senators, instead of being elected by the state assembly, could be elected popularly by the rakyat. Now, that would be a great democratic change. Eh? A third thing the constitution says, we can decrease the number of appointed senators. So from 44, we can reduce them. And I think we should. And fourthly, it says we can abolish appointed senators altogether. We can abolish appointed senators. So I think this is something, these are things that need to be done. And may I point out to your listeners, these changes do not require a constitutional amendment, in my view, because Article 45 says Parliament may by law. So I think the contemplation is by ordinary law. Mm-hmm. But the law will have to go through the Dewan Negara. And the Dewan Negara is not going to say yes. To pass law, you have to follow the previous law. So if you want to abolish the Dewan Negara, you have to go through the Dewan Negara. And there is a very little chance of the Dewan Negara agreeing to this change. But nevertheless, the Constitution did contemplate reform of the Dewan Negara.
Mm-hmm. And just to go back to the functions of the Dewan Negara, so you mentioned, so the law has to pass from the Dewan Rakyat into the Dewan Negara.
Yeah, the Dewan Negara, like the Dewan Rakyat, has functions, four of them. Number one, of course, is legislation. In normal circumstances, the bill must go through both houses. But as Huyi pointed out correctly, under Article 68, Dewan Rakyat can bypass the Dewan Negara. Second function, may I call it the federal function of representing the 13 states. And the remarkable thing is this, whether you are as big as Sarawak or as small as Perlis, you still have two state senators. So this is the federal function mm-hmm. of representing the 13 states. A third function is, may I call it sectoral function, that Dewan Negara is supposed to represent distinguished people who have rendered public service, the professions. It should represent minorities, for example, the Orang Asli, the handicapped. I think there should be many more women in the Dewan Negara because not enough are getting elected in the Dewan Rakyat. So that's the sectoral function. The Dewan Negara is supposed to represent sectors. And finally, number four, deliberative function. Though the Dewan Negara does not have the power to dismiss a prime minister on a vote of no confidence, there is a question time in the Dewan Negara. And the unusual thing in the Malaysian constitution is a minister from Dewan Rakyat mm-hmm. can enter the Dewan Negara and sit there and has to answer questions. Unlike in the UK, whereas if you're in the House of Lords, you don't go down to the House of Commons. If you're in the House of Commons, you don't go up to the House of Lords. But here we can. So these are the four functions. Very quickly, something that they cannot do. Dewan Negara doesn't have any constituency function because the senators don't represent an electoral district. They do not have a budgetary function. As Huyi pointed out, they do not have the power to dismiss a government. They have no power to supply the prime minister, but they can supply ministers, deputy ministers, and political secretaries.
Mm-hmm. So Article 68 says the Dewan Rakyat can bypass the Dewan Negara.
Yes, it can. It can, but I have to express a word of caution here. It is generally believed that Dewan Rakyat can bypass Dewan Negara in all laws. I don't think so. I think it can bypass the Dewan Negara only in ordinary laws under Article 66. But when it comes to constitutional amendments, that's Article 159, 161E, and Article 2B. I don't think Dewan Negara can be bypassed in constitutional amendments.
Mm-hmm. And so what happens if the Dewan Negara rejects a bill passed by the Dewan Rakyat? Does it go back to the Dewan Rakyat?
The bill will be sent back to the Dewan Rakyat mm-hmm. with the Dewan Negara's comments, any amendments. And again, it is up to the Dewan Rakyat whether to accept it or not. They can actually table the bill again, but they will have to take a one-year gap.
Right, so it's not an immediate retabling of the bill.
No.
There is a gap time.
Yes.
The gap is to enable national debate to take place so that if it is a very controversial matter, where the Dewan Nagara has strong sentiments, then I think public opinion should be tapped to find out whether the Dewan Raj should really pursue a matter that has aroused so much opposition. I think that's a good policy, that it should not be tabled immediately, that there should be a time gap.
Are there examples of bills that have gone through this process?
Not to my knowledge. The Dewan Nagara has never really been bypassed. It may be bypassed for the first time on the fake news bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we do not know. The government may decide to change its mind and decide to keep the fake news bill.
Yeah. Now, compared to the Dewan Rakyat, how effective has the Dewan Nagara been in its own functions?
No, Dewan Nagara has not really performed adequately. As I mentioned to you, they meet 20 to 25 days a year. In my personal view, we need to change things. For example, the present practice is always the Dewan Rakyat meets first. Then after Dewan Rakyat has adjourned, then the Dewan Nagara will come on. Or sometime there may be a 1 or 2 days overlap, but normally Dewan Rakyat will meet first. That's not necessary. I think the two houses should sit together. And in my personal view, lot of bills should be introduced in the Dewan Nagara first, then go to Dewan Rakyat and vice versa. If a bill is non-political, non-controversial, for example, it involves issues of, let us say, morality, where politics is not necessarily involved, I don't see why the Dewan Nagara cannot handle the bill first. So Dewan Nagara has been treated as a rubber stamp to the Dewan Rakyat, and Dewan Rakyat has been a rubber stamp to the government of the day. And I think we need to change this.
And what sort of reforms would you think would be an option to improve that efficiency?
Well, in the Dewan Nagara, a lot of amendments, as I mentioned earlier, under Article 45, some amendments are already proposed. But other than that, let me borrow a few things from what Hui was saying, add a few of my own. Number of sittings should improve. At the moment, under the law, under Article 52, between one sitting of Dewan Nagara and another, six months can elapse. I scratch my head, my gosh, what is this? Why should it be 6 months? 6 weeks maybe, but why 6 months? This ratio of 44 appointed senators to 26 elected, this is scandalous. This should not be so. As I mentioned, it was 16 appointed to 22 elected. Elected were clearly in a majority. Now it's the other way around. And then, of course, from what Hui was saying, committees. I think Dewan Nagara should have more committees, legislation committees, joint committees with the Dewan Rakyat, oversight committees. They should. And I think they can really perform a service to the nation by examining the laws. Every law is a compromise between conflicting interests. Mm-hmm. No laws are perfect or ever can be. No human laws can be. So I think the Dewan Nagara can play a role to revise legislation, to offer a non-political debate, to revise the bill and even to delay it. This role is not being performed.
And perhaps just to round off to both of you, why is it so important for Malaysians to understand how the Dewan Rakyat, the Dewan Nagara and just Parliament as a whole, to understand how it functions?
I think as a voter, whether you're going to be first time voting in the next 5 years, 4 years, it is always important to understand the function of both houses, mm-hmm. and also especially the function of your MP. Because I think in reality in Malaysia, there's just too much politicking instead of debating policy, healthy debates. I think we really don't have that. Most of the time when you, I think rarely people actually sit down in front of the TV to actually watch the debates, because a lot of times either the MPs are not there, the ministers are not there, there's no substance for even the rakyat to actually see what's happening. It doesn't attract the attention at all. But as a voter, it is always important to understand what they do, what is your right, what can you ask your MP to do for you, because ultimately they are your representative in the House. They represent your voice, especially the minority, the more vulnerable groups. You need your voices to be heard in the Houses, so you need your Member of Parliament to say something useful, to debate something more meaningful in the Parliament. So for you to actually effectively petition or urge your MP to do something, you need to understand what is their role, what is their function.
Yes, I think the catchwords are that the Dewan Rakyat is consisting of representatives of the people. Mm. If they are representing the people, then they should have our interests in mind. They should not support laws which run contrary to our interests. They should not vote taxes that would be oppressive. So I think that's democracy. In a democracy, the representative and elected legislature is the central pillar of a democratic system. And I think we are entitled. May I also add, the electoral process costs a lot of money. Hundreds of millions are spent actually in electing a parliament, going through the whole process, drawing up the electoral register. So we need our money's worth.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Emeritus Professor Dato' Dr. Syed Salim Farooqi, Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Malaya, and Kee Hui Yee, a member of the Bar Council Constitutional Law Committee. If you've missed any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can download the podcast on our website, on our BFM app, or on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.